friend?
Good. How are you, Todd?
Oh, it's a crazy day, my friend. I mean, the world is blowing up. We've got the UK with the white George Floyd moment, and we've got what's going on in Europe. It's absolutely crazy. Pete, I wanted to say that I think the world needs to wake up here. I think we are on the verge of a nuclear war, and I think this leadership in Europe is okay with it. They've destroyed their own energy. They've destroyed their own culture, their society. Their manufacturing has been destroyed. I think it's on purpose. What say you?
Yeah, well, I mean, to take it in pieces, you know, the start with the energy shock and the deindustrialization, which should not be surprising to anyone, can be traced exactly back to their post-2022 decision to sanction Russia, and of course, the corresponding loss of cheap gas, which led to this sustained high energy prices. And, you know, as Scott Bessent has said numerous times, you know, you can't fix an economy unless you fix energy prices.
Yes.
And, you know, to give people an idea of how severe it is for these EU countries, the average energy price for an EU country is 4 to 6 times the price paid in the US for gas and electricity. And we feel like we overpay for our gas and electricity, but just think of that 4 to 6 times. So if you take Mercedes-Benz, a German automobile manufacturer trying to compete against Cadillac, which is a GM company from the US, you know, the second highest cost item for the manufacturer of a vehicle is energy prices. So they're paying 4 to 6 times what their competitors are paying, which is unsustainable. And that's what's caused this factory closures in not only automobiles. Volkswagen has announced they're leaving Germany, but also the same thing's happening in the chemical industry, steel industry, and the fertilizer industry. In fact, the EU reported record manufacturing closures in 25 and 26. And it's not getting any better. The EU forecast for 26 is 1.1% industrial growth. And that's pretty bad. So that's just the energy shock and deindustrialization. The next part, which, you know, your previous guest was talking about, is this massive social and cultural strain, you know, which has been caused almost singularly by their mass migration policies, and then compounded by these globalist EU leaders via integration failures. So it's one thing to allow mass migration. It's another to make no effort to integrate those migrants into your country's culture. And as long as humans have lived in societies, in communities, which, you know, ties back to the agrarian revolution when we started learning how to grow crops. For as long as we've been doing that, you know, human nature says that the newcomer adapts to the group that they join. So whether it's a clan or a country, the new individuals adapt to the country they join. And that doesn't mean they don't bring with them different ways of looking at things, new skills, new talents. But, you know, that's designed to be a drop in the bucket. And over time, those drops in the bucket change the bucket, change the bucket of water being culture. Those drops change it over long term, but a sudden you know, abrupt change causes all the things we're seeing in Europe right now: energy poverty and inflation, and of course the eroded living standards.
Well, you know, so, I've been talking to a lot of the people over there, especially in Germany and the UK, and there is a refusal to connect the dots that you just did. And they, you know, for instance, the draft is happening. Oh, well, it's fine. We have to protect ourselves. You know, the females are being enlisted in Ukraine. Oh, it's fine. I mean, I have a source whose sister just went to the front. He doesn't expect her to survive. in Ukraine. So, I mean, it is savage what they're doing to the white Christian populations. And I don't think the populations there are waking up. Maybe in the UK, maybe this George Floyd moment where a man was knifed by an immigrant Sikh with a ceremonial sword, which I didn't know. I mean, they take care of, they block knives for everybody in the UK except the Sikhs. They can wear swords. I mean, it's you can't make this stuff up. So the kid's killed or stabbed five times. He's on the ground in handcuffs saying, "I can't breathe." And the cops say, "I don't believe you." Meanwhile, they're responding to the racism claims of this family against the white guy who's laying on the ground bleeding out. I mean, it's insane, Pete. I mean, I don't, maybe this will wake up the UK. Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, just to that point, you know, the stabbing by the Sikh, known criminal, by the way, known to the local police as a criminal. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's almost no more accurate metaphor for the demise of Europe than what happened to that young man, the slow mm-hmm. bleeding to death mm-hmm. at the hand of barbarians, while corrupt authorities tie the people's hands behind their back. And so
literally.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you have is an incredible metaphor for what's going on. You know, it's a microcosm of what's happening in a macro sense to all of Europe. And look, you know, as with everything, we try to bring out what are the lessons. Well, the lessons is we were within a hair of, you know, falling into the same predicament.
Yes.
This globalist control over our society, this mass censorship, which, you know, we had under the Biden administration. The FBI office in San Francisco ran Twitter, ran Facebook, decided what could be said, what couldn't. And that's part of what happened here. Even when that young man was stabbed, no media report, no social media context was allowed that stated anything about his race. It's not even a race. Sikh is not a race. It's a religion.
Right.
But they've labeled it a racial issue in Britain. Everyone, just like here in the U.S., the leftists call, you know, Mexicans another race. They're not another race. and underpinning all that is the basic, you know, genetic fact that there's no genetic basis of race. So you see this created narrative designed to split the people, designed to destroy the cultures that have gotten every country to where they are today. And in the name of globalism, in the name of global control and global profits. And
well, you know, I don't think we're done here in the US, because I read an article this morning. I think there's still an element within our government, whatever agency, that is still trying to do exactly that. Because I read an article this morning that the FBI is now tracking data center extremists, meaning people who don't, you know, and I'm on the fence on the data centers. I can see both sides. You need to compete with China for AI, but I understand people that get their homes taken by eminent domain, or their water pressure drops, or their electricity bills triple. I understand, or the noise, or you know, the eyesore. I get that too. But for the FBI to be tracking data center extremists instead of the 20 million illegals we have in our country seems to me just insane. Back to you.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. And and I would just say this on the premise that's driving that whole debate right there mm-hmm. is that we have to have these AI, these energy centers all over the country. And, you know, I may be an outlier, but I work quite extensively with AI. I'm mm-hmm. a writer. And mm-hmm. so I believe that the best way to expose the limitations of AI is as a writer. You can write something and then ask AI to reorganize it. Say you're putting it in a different context. Mm-hmm. I'm not being hyperbolic. I'm just telling you my experience. 100% of the time, in my opinion, it's worse than what I sent to them. So all it's doing is taking the things I wrote, which are fact-based with, you know, a conclusion at the end, and then reorganizing them. And it's always reorganized into lists. You can, one of the ways you can always tell AI is it's full of these lists.
Yeah,
you know, everything is statement A, B, C, D, then sub-statements off of each of those alphanumeric. So I think that debate needs to continue to be flushed out. I agree with you. Every community should make their own decision. There should be no one forcing these data centers on local economies, local cultures, and certainly the FBI should have nothing to do with it. I can't. There's so many other threats in this country, yeah. And they still haven't rolled up Antifa,
yeah.
Which, you know, is like leaving an enemy that you know is trying to destroy you, and you're not doing anything about it. So, I think it's a waste of time. What if the FBI is in fact doing that, and it needs to be changed right away?
Well, I think we have a civil war, not kinetically between the population, but inside our government agencies. I think there's literally white and black happening right now, and media is key to that. You know, in Europe, one of the things that enrages the population, which was done here to some extent, but not to the same extent, although a lot of the fraud's been uncovered, is that they are getting extremely wealthy, looting their own countries while they install this tyranny. I mean, especially true in Ukraine. We've had Thierry Laurent on here many times about France, what Macron is doing, essentially just looting the industry and looting the treasury. So they're getting rich while destroying the population. I mean, that seems like a pattern. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it underpinning the whole thing, let's just start with the Ukraine aid scandals, which we've covered extensively. Mm-hmm. Major 2025 corruption, NABU uncovered it. It's recording, so they couldn't hide it. And otherwise they would have. The multi-hundred million dollar corruption that had to do with Energodom, which is mm-hmm. a private energy company in Ukraine. And it was all about kickbacks and laundering via linked networks and NGOs, all of which had ties to European leaders and, of course, Zelensky and his associates. And, you know, the EU always has some reaction to each new, discovery of this corruption in Ukraine, but then it's kicked under the rug. And that's really one of the main issues that, again, you and I have been talking about, especially with U.S. aid. There's no transparency. This aid flows through defense contracts and reconstruction funds, and there's no transparency where that's going. It's our taxpayer money, but yes. We have no idea where it's going. And of course, we know where it's going. It's going to the elites and the NGOs who are owned by the elites or have family members, which we've covered extensively. Mm-hmm. Also, how many Democratic politicians have family members running and working in NGOs in Ukraine. EU calls it washing machine schemes.
Laundromats. Yeah.
That's what's happening. It's just a cycle of corruption. And, we have all kinds of examples of that. The EU just conducted a massive war game. And in the war game, they openly stated the enemy was Russia, and they did an AI driven war game on what would happen if Russia attacked Lithuania. And the answer was the EU would destroy 33% of the Russian military during the initial invasion, which would send them back, which would send Russia back and actually defeat the invasion of Lithuania and the Baltic nations also. But then you get down to the footnotes, and the company that ran the war game is the leading British drone manufacturer. And in the war game, the way that NATO wins the war against Russia is through the extensive use of these specific drones. So no surprise, it's a British drone company sponsoring the war game, and the result of the war game is the, you know, NATO wins, but only by the use of these British drones. You just can't make something like that up.
No, you can't. It's the old check the assumptions of the model, right? I mean, it's you know, it reminds me of the day back in the day in my soft days when we were, you know, the only tier one irrefutable aircraft. In the 160th, we would do exercises with them, and they would all of a sudden find these islands where they would have to stop and refuel on the map. You know, so it's like, but you know, they solved that problem. But it was funny back in the day. Anyway,
I didn't know that.
So the other thing that I wanted to bring up is, let me just, they're starting to figure this out, right? I mean, you see in the UK, I think this, I just had a gentleman from Scotland on, and he was saying this may be the moment. Before we get into Ukraine and everything, do you think the EU or the UK specifically has the will to survive?
Yeah, I'm, because I don't live there. You know, I do have Brit blood in me, so, but I can't fathom how they allowed themselves to get to this level, which I only say that because it gives me some skepticism that they're going to rise up, even with this latest incident, this young man being stabbed by this, you know, criminal Sikh. And so I'm not sure, Todd. I just know that, you know, it's not just Britain, it's France too. And, you know, they saw very strong nationalist rally performance. They're called RN in France.
Yes.
In the European municipal elections. And what it foretells is a broader right-wing shift on immigration, economy, and of course, Ukraine fatigue. Everything that the globalists are pushing, everything that the EU leaders continue to push. And, you know, that's leading to this voter revolt across Europe, which, you know, again, expands us to Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands. And in all the recent elections, the centrists were punished over their, you know, the current cost of living, again, energy, migration, and the open border policies that they continue to allow and support. So, you know, if you use France as a bellwether, I think, you know, that it's still very, very dark days ahead for Europe. I don't know what it's going to take, but if you kind of compare it with what was going on in the U.S. under Biden, you know, we weren't as far along as they were. So we had independent media, this voice, you know, speaking the whole time that the Biden administration was conducting these totalitarian tactics against the people of the country, and all the same things that, you know, have put the European countries, their people, into handcuffs, just like that young man, and allow the criminals to continue operating. So I don't have a prediction, Todd. I hope for the best. I know we've said it many times, you know, clarify to our viewers, our listeners, that, you know, don't hold the whole country, you know, responsible for what's going on with the EU. This is on steroids, the same thing we went through from 20 to 24. They have no voice from the local level. You know, the mayor of, you know, London is a Muslim, and more Muslims are mayors of large towns in England than traditional Brits. So, you know, you can't compare the two, because I think we were early enough to at least put a stop to halt the progression of the censorship and the control. But as you said earlier, and I think it's worth constantly repeating to our viewers, is that it's far from over yet. And we see that with these ICE facility protests, which, you know, again, defy belief. There's no reason that other than you're for violating the law to protest ICE taking known illegal immigrant criminals off the street. There's no basis of fact. There's no logic of why anyone should be protesting. And of course, the New Jersey ICE facility, the first night of arrests, I think 70% of the individuals arrested were from out of state. So, you know, you see the fake nature of these protests, which match what I was just talking about. There's no logic of why to be protesting ICE. They're doing what Congress, many Democratic, you know, majority Congresses, the laws they created.
I'm watching my friends gain more and more weight. And then eventually I got to tell you, this is a little dark, but a bad diet literally killed my whole crew.
Wow.
Diabetes, a stroke. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's like, you had a stroke? You're not even 50 years old. You guys got to quit eating this stuff. Your body knows what's what. You're not conscious of this. But that's why people will go to the refrigerator and they'll grab this and that and the other and put together this outrageously elaborate combination of foods. Your body's trying to reach balance. Unbeknownst to us, our bodies are always trying to reach homeostasis. You can't eat all of this stuff and expect to live a long time. And one thing led to another. And I went, you know, forget this. We're going to make our own product. So we partnered with one of the world's top three biochemists where nutrition-specific study is concerned. I said, all I want is the best nutritional and immune support product in the world. So we mixed it in yogurt. It's a powder. I got a bag of it here. I keep one on the console all the time, you know, just so I can show people.
Yeah.
And it's a powder. Now, this is not candy. This is hardcore nutrition. And sugar is an enemy. And most people do not know that the reason these bellies are showing up on people all over the place, your body makes fat to store the toxins it can't get rid of. So it just puts them over here. But I can tell you this. You take this for 30 days and then lay off of it for 2 or 3 days, and you'll go, good grief, give me some more. Skin, nails, hair growing back. Cut yourself and it heals in half the time.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
And of course, if you go back and replay Obama and Hillary spitting fire about immigration and saying things Trump has never said about deportation, and then you take the facts, Obama forcefully deported more people than Trump did last year in 2012. Obama forcefully deported 2.5 million and Trump just over 2 million last year. So they're, you know, what they, even what they believe in, they turn upside down if it'll help prove that someone like Trump is wrong or help divide the country, cause chaos, and bring us closer to them being able to take back over.
Well, you know, it's very timely to have you on this morning because I had a French gentleman earlier on who has some experience in Russia, but this attack by Ukraine or MI6 or whatever is the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum is pretty significant. I mean, it didn't happen at the forum itself. It was on an oil facility a little ways away, but it was a few hours before the event started. Obviously, by MI6, I mean, Europe wants war, Pete. This is the answer to their reason to stay in power. It's hatred of Russia. It's hatred of Christianity. It's desiring the Ukrainian lands and resources. And it's why the censorship in Europe is that dark cloud is coming over Europe, you know, another 1,000 years of darkness. I mean, I've got all your videos and stuff ready. So I think they want war.
Yeah. You can show some of those while I talk, because it just shows they've intensified the propaganda and the lies instead of what we've constantly said. You would think they'd start moonwalking backwards, you know, to find a way out to save their administrations. But I think they're so all in on this globalist takeover and the criticality of Ukraine to enabling that globalist takeover, that there's no turning back for them. And of course, you know, the war in Ukraine serves a huge selfish benefit to the EU and these EU leaders as a distraction from the domestic failures we just talked about. Mm-hmm. When plants are closing, when Volkswagen's closing, and BMW and Mercedes are thinking about closing, and massive chemical plants, which, as you know, as a German, you know, a study of German history, chemicals have been their number one industry for as long as the Industrial Revolution has been going on, back to the days of Einstein. And all this does is the Ukraine war allows them to prolong their involvement and then divert attention away from the economic wars, the migration crisis, and the declining trust in government. And it's again, it's human nature. It shows, you know, that the behavioral psychologists are advising them, because everyone knows war unifies against external threats. So they use the war in Ukraine to unify these people to accept the things you just talked about. And of course, that comes down to the ideological drivers, which, you know, as we mentioned, the EU is so much further along than the US, but very similar to where we were. They could not survive without narrative control by the mainstream media in Europe. And that narrative frames Russia as an existential Orthodox Christian authoritarian threat. And I pulled that off. I did a little research. I said, what's the most often, what tag is most often used to talk about the threat from Russia? And it's Orthodox Christian authoritarian threat. Again, you can't make that up. They're saying it out loud, but they think that because they distribute it through all their media in different formats, that it'll go unnoticed. But that's what they're against, compounded again by these historical grievances that are held mostly by the secular elite. And that's what amplifies it. So, you know, distraction from domestic failures and ideological drivers are what the whole purpose of the Ukraine war is. And
to destroy the Christian church as well, the Orthodox, as you mentioned. I mean, we've reported heavily on the attacks against the Christian church, the burning of churches, the beating of priests, the jailing of priests. I mean, you can't say, well, they're tied to Russia. I mean, this is a church that for 1,000 years, the people have gotten married, had funerals, baptized babies. And you can see the videos of thousands of people when they close these churches singing in the streets outside the church. You know, this is, it's ingrained into their society. And for them to be attacked and close, I mean, we have video after video. I don't have them right now, but, you know, like security police coming through the doors with chainsaws at the monastery and beating the priests and destroying the sanctuary. I mean, it's insane, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and so again, you're just bringing out the war itself, their motive. But then you get to Ukraine specifically, and you can see, and they don't hide this either, their resource and strategic motives. We've talked about this from the beginning. It starts with Ukraine's grain and agriculture. They're the powerhouse of Europe, the breadbasket of Europe. And initially, the EU, that's what the whole loan was. That's why they were rubbing their hands together and salivating back in 2014 about gaining control of Ukraine. It's the grain, the minerals, the Black Sea access, and now the gas and the post-war reconstruction contracts. Mm-hmm. These are all the prizes. And, you know, that's why we've seen the European leaders do everything they can to interfere with, disrupt, and delay peace negotiations. Because to them, a frozen conflict over negotiated peace that might empower Russia is the last thing they want. They prefer the frozen conflict over negotiated peace, I should say, because negotiated peace, it means they lost. And finally, you know, war justifies their emergency powers, their censorship, their massive spending, which just further entrenches the incumbents and the globalist control over the people.
Let's play this one video first, which is, I think it's, who is this? The prime minister of Swedish prime minister.
Yeah, okay. Kind of unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians as much as we can to direct, to help them direct their attacks in the right directions, of course.
Well, there you go. Help them attack.
Which means,
yeah.
In the right direction, Russia. And that's Sweden. I mean, we used to joke, you know, I mean, about Sweden. And
yeah,
you've got Sweden, this leader, this EU leader of Sweden, talking about, you know, helping Ukraine, directly talking. It's crazy because it just shows the desperation. It shows the motives we just talked about.
I put up the slide earlier you had of Lithuania. There's a whole issue of, and they're even educating children in Lithuanian schools, that the drones you see overhead are just Ukrainian drones who got lost. So, I mean, the real thing is that they're allowing them to use their airspace to attack northern Russia is what's right. Happening. So, and here is, and you tie that, this is the next video, which is the money laundering, which we've talked about.
Phone with a super yacht builder. And Ukrainian officials and their families have orders booked out for the next 4 years. Hundreds of millions of dollars, super yachts, all from one country. Meanwhile, Western taxpayers in Canada, in the UK, in Europe, in America, in Australia, we're funding this. Our tax dollars are buying super yachts for Ukrainian oligarchs while they tell us it's a legitimate war. They're dragging people off the streets to fight on the front lines, conscripting them, and then people are killing themselves rather than go to war. And the officials? They're buying super yachts. This is the biggest money.
It's amazing the amount of money these people are just stealing with both hands, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And that guy is well informed. So the beginning, he summed it up and said, you can't buy a super yacht. There's a 4-year waiting list right now for super yachts. And the reason it's 4 years is because there's 4 years worth of Ukrainian oligarchs at the front of the line to build all the world's super yacht manufacturers. So that's crazy. There shouldn't even be one super yacht being ordered from Ukraine, right? I mean, and if they were true patriots, Thomas Paine-like patriots, they'd be, instead of buying that super yacht, they'd be buying super rifles, super communication equipment, super medical equipment, body armor for their soldiers, if they really believed in the fight. But they don't. And again, this, it's so corrupt and so wide open, but with no mainstream media covering it and no government official across all of EU wanting to talk about it and stand their ground on it, it just continues. And it brings me back to the same thing. It's the, you know, the downside again. One of the biggest downsides of the Iran fighting is that we're allowing this to go on in Ukraine, and the U.S. can't focus on Ukraine. And I'm sure the EU is secretly happy as hell that the U.S. is distracted with Iran, because they can, as we said earlier, they prefer a frozen conflict that just, the lines stagnate, the killing continues, but the war continues. Because as long as the war continues, all of the reasons they want the war to go continue. And without Trump,
go ahead.
No, he's the only world leader who was trying to end the war, and I think Russia knew that. And you know, I hope that the dialogue going on, you know, below the cut line is coordinated between the U.S. and Russia, but you know, I'm not sure of that, given how intense the Iran situation has turned out to be as far as diplomats and negotiations and trying to come to the best the best endpoint for that conflict.
Well, the lies are what get me. You know, I've been active rebutting some of the press that's come out that, you know, Russia's losing. We got to have Americans on the ground. I mean, it's insane. There was an article out this morning that, you know, Russia's lost so many people, and they don't even mention that Ukraine's lost 10 times or a large amount more than Russia.
Right.
Here's one article you sent me. Russia's lost more tanks than the UK and Germany own. Well, that may be true, but it's not a tank war, as you've said many times. It's a light infantry war to take territory, and then the long range strike vehicles are the other component in the drones.
And it's not true. I can just tell you that's not true. And in that article, I had to go all the way down. I was looking for just show me one footnote. Where are your sources? Where's the data behind? There's nothing. The only time they ever reference anything in that article is this article is based on a long article published by the LA Times last week. So, you know, this is it's the trick of the globalist media. They just use each other as their sources. And, you know, it starts with one lie and then snowballs because everyone uses that one lie as a reference. And the bigger the publication or the media outlet, the you know, more powerful the reference is.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a number of those in there, and I put them in because they show together. There's the, you know, the latest decision by the globalists is we've got to turn the tide. We've got to make people believe again that Ukraine is winning, Russia is losing. Mm-hmm. There's hope. What we're doing, the end is in sight, and the end is a loss for Russia and a win for Ukraine. And both are ridiculous. There's not a single shred of evidence that shows Putin is in trouble in Russia. And that, you know, there's about three of those articles that talk specifically about Putin, but there's not a shred of evidence. There's no AOC in Russia. There's no protests. The economy is still doing relatively well. You know, we see some of these long-range strikes, but they're in a country the size of Russia, and the damage these strikes are doing, some of them are just hitting apartment buildings. You know, we've already talked about the gas and oil storage facilities. Those are just, you know, are just pictures. They do nothing to Russia's capacity. They're so distributed on their storage and production capability that you can take out a tank here, a storage tank here, a storage tank there, see a massive fireball, but you're really doing nothing to their ability to supply the world with what has been super expensive oil and gas. And, you know, it's only a matter of weeks before we see the economic benefits that the oil shortage from the Iran war caused for Russia.
That's the key point, because the hydrocarbons drive the war effort, right? And the fact that the price of oil is significantly higher than when the war started, even if you do lose some of the capacity, because they have hit a lot of the terminals and some of the refineries, et cetera. There is some pressure put on the Russian oil industry, but it's not to the point where it's going to impact the war or the ability to conduct the war. That's
right.
Would say.
And everything, what's most powerful when you're reading these articles is everything they say about the problems Putin's having or the problems Russia economy's having is times 10 for these EU countries. So think about it. A poll came out in Germany yesterday that the top 20 most powerful politicians in Germany, Merz was number 20. He's the least popular of all the 20 major politicians in Germany. He's the least popular. Starmer's still hanging by a thread. You know, I don't know what's going to happen there. He reports where he was going to resign. That hasn't happened yet. But he's hanging by a thread. And Macron is Macron. We're watching France burn. The country burned from mostly immigrants. And why is it burning? Because they won a soccer match. You know, you, again, a country, you know, you get what you give. And if you allow people to tear apart your cities unfettered, untouched, then they're going to tear apart your cities. And that's what France has done, especially over a soccer match. You know, the cops should have, you know, should have cracked down on that immediately with the highest level of severity, because that's nothing but hooligans, drunken hooligans. And there's no logical why. They're destroying private property that'll never get rebuilt, and stores and businesses that will probably go out of business because, you know, France won't reimburse them. They won't admit that this was a migrant riot, right, and they bear ultimate responsibility.
Well, I don't know where we're going, but my point of this show today is just to tell people we're at a critical, really critical point here. And the Europeans need to wake up and see what's going on. And they need to take some responsibility of fixing their own countries, because Russia, in response, is flexing its nuclear muscles. I mean, you had Budanov in Ukraine this morning say, oh, don't worry about those Oreshniks. You know, they're just a demonstration weapon. Well, they carry multiple independent reentry vehicles, nuclear capable, in their hypersonic ballistic missiles that you can't defend against. So to just brush them off is is the definition of insanity of someone who wants a bigger war, and maybe he's got his bunker set up. I don't know. But I'll give you the last word, Pete. Anything else you want to put out?
Yeah, no, I think this is a valuable episode because we're saying out loud what's happening in real time, and that's not happening anywhere else. This stuff just continues to go on. The corruption, the, you know, the money laundering on steroids, the fake news based on nothing, based on other fake news. It's crazy. But at the base of all that, innocent men and innocent civilians are dying every day. And I say innocent men on both sides again, Ukrainian patriots, Russian patriots dying for something that makes no sense to anyone except these globalist power brokers who happen to occupy the governments of all the major EU countries right now.
Well, it's time for them to stand up. We're going to do our part here. And that's all we got today. We'll be back on the skiff tomorrow, 10 to noon, Monday through Friday Eastern. Thanks for joining us today. And you can find all of this. We'll cut this and put it out on Ukraine SITREP later today. Thank you very much, Pete. Take care.